Welcome to the Gary T. Roller Show. Join Gary as he chats with today's innovators and changemakers of the health and wellness movement. Together, we will discover our healthier selves.
Hey, all you beautiful people, wherever you are in the world, I have to give you a little apology. I've been a little delayed on the podcasting front, and there's two reasons. One reason is you'll hear in the background, there are some jungle noises. I'm in the jungle, I'm in Sri Lanka, and it is beautiful, it is very restful. I am taking many hours extra sleep and of rest, but it comes with a downside to recording. There's lots of jungle noises, which I'm very grateful for. So please excuse the more organic episodes that are going to be coming out in the next couple weeks. As well as I really just been trying to rest. So as you may or may not know, podcasting takes a lot of time editing and trying to scrub it so it's beautiful for your ears. And I had a realization yesterday that let's just get some organic ones out there and... So you can have some pleasure listening to some new content. So this week, I am very excited to bring you two ultra running brothers from the UK and Wales, Scott and Rhys Jenkins. They are, I call them crazy. When I talk about ultra runners, very much like Dean Karnazes, that is a past guest on the show, they're running in excess of 100 miles in one go, 160 kilometers in one go, in all kinds of weather, in freezing weather, in super hot weather, in Death Valley in California, where temperatures can exceed 50, 55 degrees Celsius. If it's Fahrenheit, it's exceeding 120. Very improbable situations for the layman, very impossible situations for the layman, should I say. And these guys have a very strong mindset. Yes, they are fit and their bodies are strong, but it really comes down to their mindset. And we talk about how their mindset affects their running and how the strengthened mindset from their running affects their life, their relationships, and how they build their strong, resilient, purposeful life through the simple act of running. Now, for some of you out there, this purposeful events may not be running. It may be yoga. It may be writing books. It may be ballet. It may be creating culinary pieces in the kitchen. It doesn't really matter what it is. It is the intention behind the act that matters the most. So please listen to this very intently. These two brothers, Rhys and Scott, are doing every run for charity. They are really amazing guys. They are putting so much good into this world, and they really are changing this world every single day, whether they're on a training run, whether they're racing, because at the end of the day, their message holds up for a lot of really good charities out there. So sit back, relax, and turn up the volume.
Listeners, welcome back to another episode of the Gary Tirola Show, Conversations with Changemakers. You are definitely getting more bang for your buck this week. We have got the crazy, the Daredevil brothers themselves, the Jenkin brothers, Scott and Rhys. Welcome, guys. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having us, Gary.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Gary. Really appreciate it.
No problem. It's going to be, we're going to orchestrate who answers first because you guys are filled with energy. So we'll go one question. But I'd love to get, you guys obviously have different ideas on life in general. I'm sure a lot of similarities growing up together. Your age gap is 8 years, am I right?
Yes. Do the maths, Scott. Do the maths.
Yeah, it's 8 years. I'm the older one. I'm kind of fastly approaching 40 next year. So, yeah, I'm trying to keep up with my younger brother.
No, that's all right. I'm the same age as your younger brother, so we've got somewhere to work from, guys. The reason I want to interview you today, and the reason why I want to get behind your minds, is there's not many people in this world that run the distances that you guys run. some find it admirable, some find it crazy. Why do you resort to running? And you can both answer this question. So let's start with Scott.
I think that's a great question. And, you know, meet so many people and you know, just through work and in life in general and running, and people ask you and they say, why do you want to go out and run like 135 miles through Death Valley or whatever it might be? And I think the answer lies in almost like our purpose in life, I guess, because I think we only have like one opportunity to live our lives, to have an adventure, if you like. And when we were younger, we figured out that, you know, we're okay at running. We're not the fastest, we're not the slowest, but, you know, we could cover a long distance. And I think we realized that it would be great to do that and help others along the way. So it got us into running. Back in 2010 was like our longest run we ever did. And from there, we continue to do stuff for charity every year. And, you know, if we can have an adventure and do some good in the world at the same time, then that's almost, you know, a win-win for everyone, I guess. So at the end, you know, when it's all said and done, if we can look back and say, you know, we did our bit, we tried our best to help others, and we had a bit of fun along the way, then I think that's a good place to be.
Yeah. So now there's a big gap between 2010 and when you guys were pretty much born, like kind of like adolescent, teenage years. Have you guys always been close as brothers? Have you always had each other's backs?
Nah, yeah? I hate him.
Yeah, that's why there was an awkward pause then.
I was waiting for him to answer it, but he wouldn't.
We were waiting for each other to answer it. No, we've been extremely close. I think we lived together in the majority of the time.
And always running? No.
Always team sports. So either football, rugby. I put a lot of my experience down to rugby and sort of the mentality behind it. If you've ever been to Wales...
I've never been to Wales, but I did some schooling at Truro School down in Cornwall, and I had quite a few Welsh rugby players in our rugby team. And yeah, you guys are tough nuts. I'll give it to you.
Come to Wales in wintertime and go and play rugby up the valleys. It gives you a whole new perspective on team sport. It just gives you this sort of, like, I don't know, a bit of grit inside you, but then, yeah, the determination and so on and such. But no, back to your question about being close, yeah. I think, yeah, we've been extremely close. We've played in the same teams together, sort of cheered each other on when we've not been in the same team. So, yeah.
Yeah. We've always been close, definitely. And I'm very proud of what my brother's achieved as well, you know. He's younger, quicker, better looking than me, but, you know, I hang in there.
I'm extremely proud of what he's done.
I've always said, like, running partners, and my running partners I've always been really close to, because you spend so many miles with each other, and, like, the emotions that come out, you cannot stop. So you're really seeing the raw person, and you've grown up with your running partner. You're doing races and you're doing back-to-back Death Valley runs, which is not what the normal person sets out to do. So yeah, essentially, I want you guys to explain the influence of running on relationships.
Okay. In terms of, like, us running
for
together.
for you guys personally, so and it's quite apt because you guys can compare with the relationship that you have as brothers.
No, I think there's always that sort of competitive edge being brothers anyway, but when you're sort of undertaking a challenge, let's just use Death Valley for example, you are next to each other pretty much the whole way in this extreme heat, and it gives you that sort of bond. You could be biting each other's heads off, which, no lie, we have done quite a bit, but you've always got that connection. You know that you're never too far away from one another, and it sort of strengthens your relationship in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, just to add to that, when you go and run an awfully long distance, you know that there's going to be ups and downs. It's almost like peaks and troughs the whole kind of way, and ultimately knowing you've got your brother by your side, and, you know, quite often a great team around us, that it's going to help you get you through, whether that's through, hey, I'm trying to catch him this time, or or whether it's him, you know, coming over and saying, hey, look, you know, hang in there, you're doing a great job. I think the power of having the support from Reese in the races is incredible, because, you know, in a lot of these long races, they won't let you have a pacer up until like 50 miles or whatever. And here we are, we can kind of just, we're quite fortunate, we can run together and enjoy these experiences together. So I think that helps, you know, definitely throughout the race. As things go on, it kind of motivates you to want to do the best you can to not let the other brother down, I guess.
To give you an example, back in the summer, I ran from Bristol to London in one of the canal races. And up to that point, I think me and Scott had pretty much ran every race together. But that one Scott couldn't do because he didn't have any annual leave left. So basically, whilst I was running it, it was weird because my wife was sort of supporting me. And it was just, obviously I was doing it for charity. I had that connection and stuff. But it was just weird not having that motivation, I guess, to know that Scott wasn't there, like trying to chase me down or what have you not. And it was about 50-60 miles in, I was like, it was just a bit of a weird feeling, like not having him there or what have you not. And then actually him and his wife Abby turned up about 11 o'clock at night with a bag of McDonald's, and they actually crewed for us then throughout the night. And it was just with Keris, my wife Abby, and Scott there as well, it just literally, the pace picked up and we actually finished the race. Like, it was just the second half of the race was so much better than the first. And it just goes to show that, yeah, what was missing, I guess.
So a lot of things, this brings me to that point where a lot of running, when it comes to ultra endurance runs or cycling or whatever the case is left up to your mind. It's not really physical. You can train to a certain point, but in all the ultra runs I've done, if I didn't have a strong mind, there's no strong legs would have carried me over the finish line.
Yeah.
How, besides for team sports and rugby and all that and having a bond, what other kind of mindful tips and tricks do you fall back on in these races?
I personally, I always like to think of, I've made a choice to be there. I've always got that choice to stop if I want to. And every run I do, and I probably say the same for Scott now, it is for charity. I guess agreement, or that you saying that you're going to run for a charity, gives you that reason not to give up, because you think of the reason you're running for. And something I run for is a close friend of mine, Josh Llewellyn Jones, who has cystic fibrosis, and I'm actually the ambassador of his charity. Shout out to the CF Warriors there. But you feel like you're representing them, you're doing it for them, and it gives you that, I guess, edge, extra layer of grit when it comes down to it. It just gives you that reason not to quit.
Yeah, again, I think just to add to that, my kind of thoughts, and I completely agree with what both of you said, is that when you do a long run, you can do as much of training as you like, but ultimately it comes down to being a 75% split between mental and physical. And I generally think it's 75% mental, 25% physical, because there's going to be a point where it starts hurting, and it's just how long you can continue to suffer, and then it's finding the right triggers to guide you right the way through to the end of the race. So, you know, it might be something like Rhys just mentioned there, where you're getting a bit of food, McDonald's or whatever it might be to keep you going. Or it
We're not sponsored by McDonald's, just to stress that, Scott.
Yeah. It might be, you know, having that kind of trigger that, you know, you're going to get something nice to eat, or, you know, you're going to get a change of clothes or whatever it might be. Or it could be the fact that you're doing something for charity, or the fact that you just generally want to push yourself. There's always triggers inside you to keep you going. And as you go throughout these races, it's almost like peaks and troughs, and it's having the foresight when you're very tired and very not disorientated, but, you know, kind of just a little bit exhausted, I guess, both mentally and physically, to recognize when you're in the downward peak, so that you can engage one of those triggers. Okay, I'm going to meet my brother in 10 miles, or, you know, I'm out here doing this for charity. And that's what picks you up and takes you through to the peak of the next stage. And then recognizing that, hey, you know, this race isn't done. You've got to just keep it calm and keep on working through. So those are my kind of triggers. And I think, again, going into the next layer of that, ultra running has taught me a lot in terms of not panicking in your day-to-day life, you know, and how you control yourself when you do business or whatever it might be that you do for a profession, and not reacting to things. It's almost kind of teaches you to keep your mental chimp in a box, if you like, and not let it out of its cage, so that you can remain calm whatever the situation. So I certainly think mentally I've learned so much more from ultra run, ultra endurance events than I ever did from team sports, because it's really you against the elements. And I'm just very lucky to have a very talented brother who can run alongside me and do it with me. So that's my kind of thoughts on it.
There was there's one example back in when we ran across America. I spent the whole day listening. I love music. I love listening to music when I run. I know there's a lot of people that don't like it, but for me, it helps me get through. And I spent the whole day listening to, do you know the song Billy Joel, We Didn't Start the Fire?
Yeah.
So there was the amount of words that are in that song. And I managed to teach myself that song in one day. So literally, I now know it off by heart, which I'm extremely proud about. But that concentration took away from what I was actually going through, the pain and so on and such. So there's little things you can do. That's just a little example.
Cool. You can't sing it in tune. That's almost like a modern day mantra. We might have to get you to close off singing.
You don't want to
put himself on the spot.
Yeah. I've also got dance moves to go with it. So,
so guys, what is the difference? What's the main difference between self-sabotage, right, and pushing through a pain point for a higher good? Because people that aren't runners and aren't ultra runners can sometimes look at the feat of running across America, running around Wales, whatever feats, Death Valley, and getting to a point of exhaustion and hurting yourself and saying, well, the guys are just nuts, man. They don't know when to say no, and they are self-sabotaging themselves, versus that guy's a hero. Well, where do you see that fine line?
I think to do all these things, you sort of need to know your limitations, and you need to take a look at the environment in which you're running in. And we're going to probably use this as quite a few examples, but Death Valley is just the perfect one. But with, like, that's probably where I've had the most issues in terms of heat exhaustion and passing out at the sides of the road, extreme cramps and stuff. But I always put it back to, okay, you just calm yourself down when you're in that situation. You take a look at the overall surroundings and how you are actually feeling. And if it was ever a life and death situation, I think, speaking for both of us, I imagine that you would pull yourself out. We haven't had that situation, or Scott came close to it actually, and I'm sure he'll go into detail about that. But you do know your limits. We love to push those limits, but yeah, we'd never try and kill ourselves.
I think you're quite right, Rhys. You know, something like Death Valley is a great example, because you're not just battling that mental physical split, you're battling the elements and obviously the dangerously high temperatures. So you take all the precautions in your training. You know, you train for that climate, which is tricky to do in London and Wales, but you do it by training in the sauna and trying to acclimatize to the heat. And you're aware of what the risks are. And as Rhys said, you've got to keep yourself calm. And you need, coming back to that peaks and troughs analogy, it's recognizing, you know, when you're in a downward spiral, when you're in that upwards part of the S curve, if you like. And I think, you know, my example would be the second time I ran across Death Valley. I started getting cramp in my face. I've never had cramp in my face before, but I can tell your listeners it's very, very painful. Your face kind of just gets stuck into one place, and it's it hurts a lot. I thought, hang on.
Oh, wow.
That's quite an alarming signal. And then you kind of feel it going into your neck and stuff. And my situation was that I ended up having a condition called rhabdomyolysis, which is where creatine and protein that's naturally in your the belly of your muscles in your body, the muscle belly itself starts to tear. The protein and the creatine are toxic to your kidney filters, and that's what happened to me. But I think recognizing that I was in a situation where this was far beyond what we'd kind of trained for enabled me to realize that, hey, look, you know, this is a point where I need to call it. And I think the other thing is that we're both lucky in that we've got very supportive friends, very supportive wives who help us through these things. And they can tell the difference, because they're not the ones that are physically and exhausted, mentally exhausted. They're the ones that kind of recognize that, hang on, these two are in a condition that is not safe. So having a great team around us definitely helps too.
That's amazing. I'd like to talk about your wives. Are they supporting you in every race? Hey. they're even supporting you during a podcast. Now, I want to know, like, how important you guys got each other, but like you said, a lot of times you're physically exhausted and mentally exhausted. How important is a team while you're running? Because I know with all my runs, I used to get so excited when I was going to pass a girlfriend or my parents, or it gave me like an extra little boost. But during ultras, they're in a car, a van, or with you along the way. I know in Death Valley there would be.
Yeah, they sort of, you agree to meet in places. If it's a long race and you sort of try and, like you would do, break up 145 miles into manageable chunks, and then they'd meet you every 5 miles or so on and such. But they bring you little rewards, they bring you drinks, food, and then just the support to know that they're there is reassuring. It's also inspiring, I guess, because have you ever been a support group, somebody on a long race?
No, I've never been.
And like, they are going through a hell of a time as well, because they get sleep deprivation. They're basically looking after two prima donnas for the whole 145 miles. And it's tough on them as well. Like, people seem to just sort of forget about that. But like, we're talking about our wives, but we got really good friends that come with us as well. And it's just, it's inspiring to have them there. It's reassuring. Like I said, I guess when you are sort of on your feet, you're sort of thinking, right, can I do this? They're the calming voice which soothes you down a bit and just makes you realize it's actually not that bad.
Mm. I take my hat off to every ultra runner out there. It's a sport. It's a lifestyle that you personally put yourself into without much praise. The limelight's not there. The finish line's 100 miles away, 145 miles away, and it might be filled with 5 people or there could be 100 people, but it's not like the glory days of playing rugby in a team at school, etc. You choose this for a greater good. You guys raise money for charities. Reese, you mentioned CF Warriors. Do you both run for the same charities every run? Are you doing the same charities? How do you choose charities? What is the reason you're running for charities?
Yeah. Since 2010, we've raised money for multiple charities. I mean, we used to change at every event. As of last year, I became an ambassador for the CF Warriors. So 2019, my legs are theirs. Everything I'm doing is for them and to sort of gain publicity. Scott,
you wanna? Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've always picked something that is close to us at that point in life. So, you know, when we did Boston to Austin, it was for British Heart Foundation and Help the Heroes, which is a military charity, because one of our friends was in the military, and I was working with a Healthy Hearts group back in Wales. And then as I've moved throughout the years, I've just continued to pick different charities to help out, I guess, at different points in life. You know, we did Macmillan Cancer Support because I sadly lost a family member to cancer. I chose Operation Smile, which is a charity who restore through surgical intervention cleft lips and cleft palates throughout the world. Because it's just an amazing charity that gives people the ability to smile. And I guess it's almost like an international language, you know, the ability to smile. Yeah. But we take it for granted. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to go to Ethiopia a couple of years ago on one of their missions. And I thought, wow, what these guys do is just incredible. So I want to give up some time and effort to help raise them money. So I'll continue to choose charities, which I believe are, you talk about making a change, making a difference to the world on your podcasts. And that's ultimately what these charities do too. And if I can support them in any way, then I'll continue to do so.
Of course, that's amazing. So you guys aren't professional runners per se. You have day jobs. What are your day jobs?
I work for a digital marketing company, so I'm a social media manager, basically. Spend all day on Facebook.
Oh, great. Amazing. And yourself, Scott?
I am the UK product manager for knee replacement for Johnson & Johnson. So my job involves seeing quite frequently the inside of patients' knees when I'm in theatre and traveling around the UK and helping to market the project, the product around that. It's a really interesting job, and I'm pretty sure some of my customers look at my knees when I talk to them about running and kind of think, hey, here's my cards. We'll call you in a couple of years' time.
It's a tactical placement, because when my knees go out, I know who to go to, basically.
Amazing. So talking about that, actually, what besides for face cramping, which is I've never heard before, what kind of other injuries have you guys experienced, or have you been quite blessed not to experience anything drastic?
I've had shin splints, which are proper shin splints, where like the whole calf and leg just went the same size, which I can only describe as somebody shoving a knife into your shin every time you stepped. And that was during across America, so I had to continue running every day, and it just came down to a walk by the end of it, which was just, it was really painful. In Death Valley, the cramps are so bloody painful. They actually knocked me out one time at the side of the road. Actually, no. They knocked me out in the car as we were sort of relaxing, trying to get out of the heat. And they literally had to pull me out of the car. I was out cold, and I woke up at the side of the road thinking I was about to play football. And I was just like, where am I? And then I was like, oh, no, I'm not. I'm in the middle of a desert. I was like, okay. I was like, all right, how far have we gone? 40 miles. I was like, oh, my God. So we got like another, 90-odd miles to go. It was just one of those points in your life where it was just gradually got worse and worse and worse. And you're just like, oh, my God. But after that point in that run, the cramps subsided. So I guess it was a way my body of just accepting the pain it was going to go through. It was a bit of a weird one, but it was an eye-opening moment. Scott?
Yeah, do you know what? I think I've been quite blessed, really, in that I've never been struck by too many injuries. As Reese alluded to there, the cramps are just incredibly painful. But I've kind of recently found that, you know, salt tablets work very well as a solution for me personally for that. The worst thing for me was the rhabdomyolysis. So basically, you know, we're 122 miles into that run, and got that face cramp, as I mentioned. Should have probably eaten more salt tabs. And I just said, guys, look, you know, I don't feel great. Let's go to the hospital. And it was only really when you were talking to the physician out there that, you know, it transpired that they said, well, you know, you've got two choices here. We can send you 400 miles to Sacramento, or we can send you 80 miles to the town of Bishop in California. And they said, you've got this condition called rhabdomyolysis. I said, you know, what's that? I'm kind of sitting here, you know, my cramps have subsided, I feel fine. They said, no, you know, what's happening inside your body is the issue here. So we're going to, you know, which choice do you want? I was like, well, I hope my insurance is covering my my potentially substantial bill that I'm going to get. So they sent for the ambulance, and they said, well, you know, the ambulance is going to drive 80 miles down and then take you 80 miles back. I was like, okay, so we'll just sit here for a bit. The ambulance turned up. We went up to Bishop, and they did some tests, and they said, look, you know, if you don't start urinating again in the next kind of few hours, you might have to go on to dialysis. And it was at that point I was like, oh, okay, this is quite a serious condition. And I think for me, what caused it, you know, I'm good at taking on the fluids, but the unique challenge of Death Valley was such that because it's so hot, the blood and the water that's in your stomach area normally enables you to process food. So the way that we're sat now, you know, the blood is cooling your stomach, enabling you to process the food. I was taking on enough fluid, but what slowly happened was that the food intake had dropped. You know, I'm burning 700 and probably actually, excuse me, probably burning more like 850 calories an hour, not getting anywhere near that amount of intake. Obviously your fat and carbohydrate stores get used up first, and then your muscle starts to cannibalize itself, and it's that that breaks down the muscle belly. So that's where the problem came to me, but I've never heard of it until that point. It was pretty interesting few days, but eventually after a few prayers it started working again well, and I was able to urinate, and ended up, I think, just having 12 liters of saline fluid and just hoping for the best. So yeah, it was interesting.
Oh, so you recovered and you've never experienced it again?
I've never experienced rhabdomyolysis again. I think, talking around the support team, etc., one of the things my wife's noticed is that I have become slightly more susceptible to the changes in temperature. And I think that's something that's probably more mental than physical. So for me, going out to Death Valley in July to crew for my brother will be a great opportunity to reacquaint myself to those extreme conditions, and obviously build towards hopefully getting into the 2020 race. But Reese is going to be running there this year. Super excited.
That's so exciting. Did you, Reese, did you get into Death Valley this year? Badwater.
Yeah, into the official Badwater, which is, it's been a lifetime goal for mine, for me, since like 2010. So it's that's obviously not a lifetime, but it's a long time. And everything we've been doing has been gearing towards that. So, it's taken a lot of time, prep, experience.
Is that the reason why you've been doing your own event through Death Valley? Have you been applying the whole time, or just is that your prep?
So I've applied. No, it was prep. It's getting experience on the route, which it's not official, so it's almost like anybody could say they've done it. But it's me making myself familiar with the route. The route is the first year I went there, I thought, it's a desert. It's gonna be flat. It's under below sea level, what have you not. Okay, it's gonna be warm, but it's gonna be flat. And I got there, and you end up basically going over like three mountain ranges. So I guess I was very naive in my first year of going over there. I was like, oh my God, like one of the climbs is like 17 miles long, and I had no like walking sticks or anything. I was like, this absolutely sucks. And I was not knowing there was going to be any mountains or anything. But those years are what I've learned the most from. I now know the route. I'd like to think like the back of my hand. I know where I tend to suffer, and the heat experience is invaluable, literally. It's just, yeah.
So guys, how do you train for hot runs like that when you live in such cold places? Like, I mean, I saw your Instagram post.
Hey, Wales is a boiling place. It's not, it's absolutely freezing. And it's a horrendous weather today as well. I basically live in the sauna. that's going to be about a 12-week plan from 12 weeks leading up to the event, where I'm just going to be basically in the sauna, I think it's like five times a week. But also something else
on a treadmill,
Not on the treadmill, no, just running back and forth on the spot or doing step ups, sort of doing light exercise. They don't let you have treadmills in the saunas over here, I guess health and safety has a bit of a say on that. Something I'm going to be doing is wrapping up in layers. So when it is a sunny day, I'll be wrapped. Well, I did it the other week where I wrapped up, I had like three pairs of tights on, five tops, a hat, a hoodie. I basically just tried to make myself bake a little bit in the sun. It was cold outside, but it actually warmed my core temperature, which then sort of got me used to it. And then you just monitor your heart rate and you just go nice and slow and just try to get relaxed and get used to it, I guess. And hydration, just get used to drinking a lot of water. I mean, like a lot.
Yeah. Scott, if you're going to be crewing, do you run majority of the run with Reese, or how will it happen?
Yeah, I'm super excited to crew for him. I'm proud of him for getting into the race. You know, as he said, we've been out there and run many times, and it's just getting into that race is just awesome. So, you know, kudos to him for that. I'm going to the first 42 miles, the runners have to run solo, and then you get to a small kind of couple of shops. That makes it sound more civilized than it is. It's basically a hotel and a general store at the town of Stovepipe Wells. If you blink, you'll be through it in about 30 seconds.
Yes, I remember that from Dean's book.
Yeah. All the places there have got these kind of intimidating names like Badwater and Furnace Creek and Stovepipe Wells and
Devil's Golf Course. That was my favorite.
Exactly. So I will work with our coach. We've got a coach called Lawrence Cronk, who's a great endurance athlete himself. And he's going to come out and be in the team. So's Reese's masseuse, and I'll probably start running with Reese at like 42 miles and just break it up and take it in turns with Lawrence, because he's obviously a very fit chap as well. And then we can work really well together to keep pushing Reese forwards. And I generally think he can do a great job of that race based on his prior experience of the course. You know which places you're going to be the most exposed and at which time and where the climbs are. So yeah, I generally think it's going to be an exciting time, and looking forward to it.
There's a point in the race, it's about on the route, I don't know if it's mental or what have you not, but it's happened to me 2 out of the 4 years we've been there. Around the, literally in the same spot with it, I don't know, give or take a mile, where my body is just cramped up. It's just crazy. Out of 135 miles in the same spot, the body's just gone into like, not shock, but it's just like, oh my God, remember this?
Yeah. You silly sods. So it's 135 miles. You start below below sea level, and you climb to what height?
I don't know. It's 8,000 feet.
It's like one of the high. It's one of the highest points in California, right? So, and you climb. You climb that whole way.
Stunning, though. It's absolutely the final bit is just like it's probably one of my favorite places on earth. Genuinely, you climb out of the desert and you turn the corner, and literally you've just got this huge mountain in front of you. And they're like, yeah, you got to go 13 miles up that.
Oh, wow. So you finish off on a big climb?
Yeah. It's 13 miles straight up. I think it climbs about 4,000 feet over those 13 miles or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I think that may be the case.
And what temperatures are you running in? Centigrade or?
Centigrade. I'm not too clever with temperatures, but we've had it.
I can feel it.
Go for it. Go on, mate.
Yeah, I think it's 52 Celsius, and that equates to about
52 Celsius. That is absolutely mental, guys.
Furnace Creek is where the hottest temperature on earth had been recorded. That may have changed now, but yeah, we go straight through that, and it is just like when you're running at nighttime, it feels like you're just running in an oven with somebody blowing a heater on you. It's just it's unreal.
So I'm guessing you protect yourselves with a certain type of clothing.
Yeah. You'd probably think we go into more detail than that, but no, it's just like white clothes, light clothing, stuff which can hold on to moisture and water. So like cotton t-shirts. You just sort of try to cover yourself up as much as possible. I don't really like covering my legs, so they just get a lot of sun cream, like factor 200 if they do it. But no, it's basically put a cap on, try to cover your neck with a bit of a buff or stuff. I'm making it sound very casual here, but no, it's a lot of thought goes into it, but the stuff you actually use is not that technical, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just common sense.
Well done for getting to the race, but well done for it's because you getting to the race is really a testament of both of your preparations over the last 9 years. Without each other, I don't think either of you would be in the position you are right now.
100%. Thank you.
So,
thank you, mate.
Are there any other big ideas or actual plans after Bad Water that you guys are planning?
Go back next year. I'd love to have a crack at a double again.
That's so cool.
So doubles, so you're basically starting, you're going back and forth. You've done that already, unofficially.
Yes, unofficially.
How was that? I mean, I saw your times. I mean, it's when you get to the finish line and you have to turn around, your mind must be holding on for dear life.
Yes, you're right. I think it's literally by a thread, because the year before I'd done it one way, and I'd finished. My body had gone into relaxed mode. It was familiar with the terrain, the sign. I touched the sign, and then it was a case of, oh, Christ, I've got to turn around now and just basically retrace your footsteps for 135 miles. In a way, it's demoralizing, but like you said, you try to just get off. You can try to get away from that sign as quick as possible. Mm. So you can just say, right, okay, I've got 10 miles away from it. And then you sort of put it then into a whole new challenge or what have you. Not, it doesn't feel as bad, but it still sucks.
Do you, what is the reason you did a double? Like, were you just at a point where you guys want to try something bigger and better? And was it all in one go?
Yeah, it was all in one go. It was nonstop, I guess, technically. You do stop for like a nap or food and stuff, so that, as much as you can appreciate from that nonstop phrase. But yeah, it's literally you are on that road for, I think it was the best part of 4 days, maybe a bit longer. I can't remember now. It was a long time. It just seemed to just drag and drag and drag. And I think for like the final 30 miles, it was just a stiff headwind, which is just absolutely horrific in the valley because it just picks up and it just hits you like a brick wall. And I'd never experienced it before. But at the end, where I could see where I was going to finish, there was a dry lightning storm. So that it was lit. It became so intimidating. It was just like, Christ. And one of the, you're below sea level. You just feel like there's a chance of you getting hit by it. Obviously, there's not really, but it was just extremely intimidating running into a headwind, seeing these lightning bolts just hitting. It was just, yeah, it was just unbelievable.
I've heard many runners, ultra runners particularly, reach a point where they identify with themselves and the universe from a very spiritual level, from being at a point where you're so exhausted, you kind of, life starts making a little bit more sense. Have you ever gone through these points of extreme exhaustion?
I could probably tell you a quick anecdotal story if you like. I've never really had anything, well, I guess some people might interpret it as being spiritual, but back in 2010, the first event that really got myself and Reese into doing the ultra long distance stuff was that we ran from Boston in Massachusetts to Austin in Texas, which was 2,000 miles. It was 75 marathons in 75 days. And quite often during that time, it was, as you can imagine, really, really difficult, really, really tough physically and mentally. And Reese may have shin splints. I may have sore calves. Our friend Rusty, who's running with us, you know, he might have sore feet, whatever it might be. So you'd be together, you'd be experiencing it together, but you'd never be like right next to each other on the road. You know, one day you might be slower, the next day the other guy might be slower. So we got to Kentucky, and Kentucky is a really rural place. The shoulders of the roads are really tight. The time of year that we were there wasn't very good. And this one day, we had a tornado warning come onto the radio as we drove back to the place we finished the night before to resume running. So we took shelter in this petrol station, and the weather cleared through, and we got back out and started running. And on an event like that, because you are constantly wondering where you're going to stay that night, you know, where you're going to get your meal from, it's all also almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you're basically at that base level, right at the bottom. You don't care about anything other than where you're eating, where you're sleeping, and will you die or not. We started running, and the day went really long, and it ultimately meant that I'd end up running in the dark. So we had about 6 miles to go and started running in the dark, and this car pulled up alongside me. And I was, you know, in Kentucky, it was an unusual place to run. You know, sometimes people were super friendly. Sometimes they're a little bit more intimidating. And at night in the dark with no headlamp on the side of a road, this car pulled alongside me. And there's this girl and guy. And, you know, they said, hey, you know, what you doing out here kind of thing. And I said, well, you know, we're just running from Boston to Austin. They're like, what, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, and Austin, Texas, what, tonight, kind of thing. I'll never forget it. This girl said, hey, look, I'll get out of the car and I'll run with you. And I said, well, I think I've still got about 5 miles to go here. And she got out of the car, and she had jeans and like Converse pumps on, and she started running with me. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. You know, thank you so much, because whilst I wasn't the quickest, I was still in decent shape at that point, having done so many marathons in so many days. And we started running and we got to chat in, and I asked this girl, I said, you know, what's your name? And she said, oh, my name's Destiny. I said, oh, okay, cool. Well, you know, nice to meet you. My name's Scott. This is why we're doing this run, blah, blah, blah. And we carried on. And sure enough, we got to the end of the 6 miles. Now, where the end of the run finished for her, her boyfriend, who had, I assume it was her boyfriend, had followed us in the car with the headlights on us to kind of keep us safe the whole time, pulled over. And she jumped in the car and the car took off. And it was like a T-junction. So the car took off straight up the road. And I went around the corner to our support vehicle, and Reese was in the van, and the other guys were in the van. They were waiting for the slow older brother to turn up. And, you know, I got in and I said, hey, guys, you know, the most amazing thing just happened to me. This couple turned up and they got out of the car, and the girl started running, and the car behind, you know, followed us behind. You know, did you see, they just took an off. And I'll never forget it. The guys were like, there's not been a car come past here for like at least 30 minutes. I was like, no, the car just went past. And they said, no, oh, that didn't happen. And I said, no, I've got the details. I'll go back, you know, I'll bring them up on Facebook. We get back to the hotel room and, sure enough, put it into Facebook. I had it all written down on my phone, and, yeah, didn't exist on Facebook at all.
No ways. That's shut me up for a little while.
I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not a particularly spiritual person. I don't know whether it's a hallucination or whether, you know, I don't really know. I still to this day don't really know whether I believe in guardian angels or anything like that. But all I know is that on that particular day when I really needed some help and something to get me through, something somewhere happened that made that run come to an end and got me through it. So, yeah, that's probably the most kind of spiritual thing that's happened to me.
That is a very beautiful story. It's testament to, whether you believe in God or not, it's testament to the energies of the world and this universe, and at a time of need, because at the end of the day, we're all just energy in motion, really, us as humans, that you could explain that story in such vivid detail and then tell me at the end that no one else saw it and it didn't exist is profound.
Thanks. I don't know what happened, but it got me through that day, and it's something I'll never ever forget. But it was cool. Thanks, Gary.
I've never really had anything so spiritual happen to me like that, and that sounds like absolutely incredible, really. But a couple of friends of mine, we were supposed to cycle from Italy to France, and one of the guys, it was a relay, so we had two bikes. We had our own kit, and the idea was to sort of do it nonstop and sort of get it done. And we went to the start, which was outside the Roman Colosseum. And basically, the guy was kitted up, ready to go. And he set off. We're like, okay, yeah, let's all go back to the support vehicle. And we went back to the support vehicle, and we're like, where is it? And we're in like a whole new city. We don't know where the heck we are. We're like, okay, it must be on the street over, what have you not. And we sort of started looking around for about an hour. We couldn't find it. We just thought we'd been stupid tourists, really. And then suddenly it just sort of hit. We've been robbed. We were just like, the vehicle must have gone. It's been stolen. And like we looked around, and it was like a bank holiday weekend. And I don't know if you've been to Italy on a bank holiday weekend, but basically nothing is open. So we're in Rome. We have nowhere to go. We've lost pretty much everything. We've got one guy dressed up in Lycra and one bike, which is quite funny watching him walk around Rome. And what do you do? We didn't really know what to do. We just headed straight to the airport. And we rang home to just say, look, we've, excuse the French, we fucked up a bit. We've been robbed. We've lost everything. It's a rental vehicle, our kit, our passports, wallets, phones, everything. We lost it. And my dad was like, you're an idiot. I said, what do you mean? He's like, well, there's a tracker on the vehicle. So they managed to speak to the rental company, and they got the tracker, and they pinpointed where the van had been taken from. Oh, no, where the van had been left in. So I guess all you want to do is get that, whatever your possessions back, that human instinct just kicks in. And we just got out at the airport, and we jumped in a cab, and we went straight to it, not thinking about anything that'd be waiting for us. And we got there, and they tucked the vehicle underneath like a tree next to a bin, next to a lane. And basically you went down the lane, and it's like an empty old house, and you're like, okay, they're throwing the stuff in there, what have you not. We couldn't see anything. We went back to the vehicle, and they just gutted everything from the vehicle. They'd taken the spare bike, they'd taken all our clothes, everything they'd taken. And in the front was a bin bag, and we were like, it was just a bin bag we'd left there, and they chucked our passports into the bin bag. So we're like, all right, okay, they're obviously, they're nice people, I guess, if they're leaving us our passports. I don't really know. And what they did, it's like, okay, it's not as bad as it seems. One of us has got a phone. We've got a bit of money. One of us had a wallet on us. And we've got one bike with one bit of a cycling kit. We sort of rang the charity. And we just said, look, we've messed up. There's no way we can do this. We're sorry we've been robbed. And they were like, oh, my God, this is horrendous. And they put up a post that the charity was for Luca. And within, up until that point, we'd raised a couple of £100. And literally, as soon as they put that post up, people, the donations just literally went up like a clock. I mean, you could check it every 30 seconds and there'd be like another £10, £20 on top of it. And within like 8 hours of that going out, we'd made like, I think it's about £5 or £6 grand for this charity. And it was just like incredible to see like all these people like sort of standing up to a bad thing in life and sort of supporting us and sort of saying, well, you could still do it. You've got one bike, you've got one bit of kit. So we ended up actually managing to do it between five of us. We flew over somebody with a friend's brother with a spare key for the van. And basically, we had the sport vehicle back, we had the bike, and we all shared kit for like 4 or 5 days, cycling kit now. So you can imagine what goes on in that. It was absolutely buzzing, disgusting, and horrible. But it's one of those points in my life where it was like, something really bad happened. We were in a really bad situation, but because of the support of absolute strangers, we managed to pull through and actually get it done, which is, it's not so spiritual, but it just puts your faith back in human, mankind, I guess.
That gives me so much compassion, kindness, and hope in humans. And this leads me on to the question. I'm going to ask some fire questions to start ending off here. I'll ask each of you. You'll each have your turn at different questions, though. So Reese, just to carry on there, what is the purpose of the human experience?
What is the purpose? You ask me that and I say it to a lot of people. I just want to push the limits. I want to do good whilst doing it. And I sort of want to experience new things. I want to see how far I can go. I want to see what I can achieve. And I guess my outlet is running. I'm not the fastest. I'm pretty slow. But when it comes to it, I won't give up. And I want to see how far I can go before I actually try to give up. But no, it's to do good. And I think karma is a massive thing in life.
Yeah. Scott, what is important about human connection and why?
That's a good question, Gary. I think all too often in modern society, we become embroiled in this kind of technological era. And by getting back in touch with being outdoors and nature, if you like, and helping others, then we can live a life that is fulfilling for ourselves, but is also helpful to others along the way. And I believe that we have a responsibility to connect with people all around the world and try to help others that are perhaps less fortunate or enjoy being with people to experience life. But most importantly, I think we need to listen to people and take the time to put down our phones and put down the TV and just live the life in front of us, connected to the people around us.
Beautiful. Reese, what are your daily routines?
My daily routine, training-wise or just life-wise?
Life-wise.
Life-wise. Wake up, have a coffee with my wife, do a quick little stretch, and then I'm out the house within about half an hour running. It's a case of I commute back and forth to work running, so I incorporate that. I guess it's not classed as my training, but it's just an extra a buffer, I guess, is an extra bit more, couple more miles in the bank. Get to work an 9 hour day, at lunchtime, sort of skip lunch and just go for a run. That's probably the majority of my training in the middle of the day for about an hour, hour and a half. Finish up the day, come home, run home or walk home, depending how tired I am. And then literally just chill out with my wife. We like to do a lot of mindfulness. So Lego, I absolutely love Lego. Oh,
amazing.
It's and puzzles tend to do us. Actually, my wife's actually playing on Lego now. as I'm speaking to you.
That's awesome. I love that. Okay, Scott, the world needs more.
Complete the sentence.
Nice. The world needs more people who care about other people. Because I think we're all too dismissive of what's going on around us. And when we take the time to pause and listen to what people are saying, then they may have problems, or they may not. They may be telling you something interesting, or they may not. But unless we take the time to listen, then only then can we help others.
That's amazing, guys. Thank you so much, because I feel you both are doing that exact nature, that exact activity every single day by what you're doing. It's not just the run, it's the prepping for the run and the nature in which you guys are doing it. Like Dean Konassa said to me last week, the greatest equalizer in the world is running, because no matter your race, sex, age, religion, all you need is a pair of runners, and all of a sudden everyone's smiling at each other. You know, like you get a car driving past you, you'll hoot, you'll get a car stopping next to you and the girlfriend jumping out and running with you in her jeans, whether it happened or not. So I think with you guys doing it for such great charities and great causes, I cannot wait to see your lives evolve and help more people.
Gary, thank you so much. That's really kind. And, you know, I think you must remember that the podcast series that you present do exactly that. They impact people. People listen to them and take messages from them. I'm not saying from us, but, you know, from your other guests that you've had on, they can make a big difference to people. You know, it might inspire one person to go out and have a run, and that one person could have an impact that, you know, they raise money for charity. So, you know, what you're doing is spreading that message, and it's so important that there's people like you out there making no change to people. So, you know, congratulations for what you're doing as well, man.
And they're great for help passing the time whilst running. I listen whilst I run, so
yeah.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. Where can listeners find you? A website, social media, etc.
We're all both on social media. Reese Jenkins, Scott Jenkins. We have a page, the Jenko Bros. That's all on Facebook. And then Instagram, I am RJENKO11. And Scott, I can't remember your handle, so you're going to have to jump in here.
Yeah, it's Scott J. Jenkins on Instagram. And Reese runs an awesome ultra running company. So anyone that's out there that wants to get involved with doing an ultra run, then they're a great place to start. It's called Pegasus Ultra Running. So you can come meet us at one of those races too. We'll be there.
Amazing, guys. Yeah, no, I'd love to, man. I've been so I'm based in Kuwait now, and we probably pop over to Europe soon. We might have we are vegan restaurant consultants, so we open restaurants kind of around the world. And we've got a pending deal that's going to be throughout Europe, so hopefully we can do something there. I can pop over. Never been to Cardiff, and I've always wanted to.
Well, you've got a place to stay now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, amazing, guys. Thank you so much, and listeners, I'll check you next week. What an episode. I absolutely love these guys. This is something very special about two brothers that have grown up together their whole life and are doing their purpose-driven life together, and they've got the same goals, and they're really pretty much living each other's shoes. They're probably not talking to us too much about the arguments they will have during a long run, but I'm sure there's many. But really, at the end of the day, they're working for similar charities, they're working for the same purpose, they've got the same drives and goals, and there is such a thing as collective consciousness. I always say that your consciousness is very powerful. If you can gain an understanding and awareness of your own consciousness, you are powerful beyond limits. Now, when you combine your consciousness with other people that are close to you, groups, etc., what happens is you gain a momentum of group consciousness, which is even more powerful than an individual. And this is why
revolutions happen in massive groups, and things like veganism get stronger in groups, whether it's a Facebook group or a physical group. There's this understanding of teamwork. This is why team sports do so well. You know, you can't throw a single guy onto a rugby field and hope he demolishes the 15-a-side rugby team. So at the end of the day, if we can surround ourselves with like-minded people and grow our team, our sangha, our family, then we will be able to accomplish anything. We will be able to go further. I love the saying, to go somewhere fast, go alone. To go somewhere far, go together. Guys, have a beautiful week. And yeah, you're very lucky this week. We'll be launching another Partners in Kind episode in the next day or two. Claire interviews me. We go deep, very deep. I even share an embarrassing story, so stay tuned. And yeah, you know where to find me, Gary_Tirola on Instagram. That's where I'm at most of the time. I am kind of on and off right now for the next week, being in Sri Lanka and resting. So excuse me if I am delayed in responding. Otherwise, please, if you love the episode, please will you rate and subscribe to the show and share it with your family and friends. I really would appreciate this. I do this out of the goodness and love of my heart, and there is no monetary side to this. It is literally just getting into your ears with episodes and interviews with change makers from around the world. So until next week, peace and love.